Hello, and thank you for tuning in to Not Offended Podcast. I am your host, Robert Farmer, and today we are going to be diving into a conversation about addiction. Last week, we hit the ground running with Trump versus Biden. I interviewed my good friend, Aaron, and if you missed out on that conversation, go ahead and search for that in your library and get caught up. And well, today is going to be a hard, hard topic when we dive into addiction. It's going to be miracle or self-help. So let's get right to it. When it comes to addiction, I just want to make it very clear that everyone's story is unique and different. And every story has different elements of pain, hurt, and trauma, not just to those who are addicted, but those around them, their family and friends. And I don't want to make light of this topic. And so although my story is one story among many, I just want to acknowledge that this is by far not the standard, and there's no cookie cutter way to approach addiction. So before we get into it, I just want to say, if you are struggling with addiction, reach out. Don't keep it a secret. Get help. Ask for help. Tell those around you. Generally, addiction starts out as a lonely, isolated thing that you're going through, and you feel like nobody can understand you, or nobody knows your pain, nobody knows what you're going through. That is not true. There is other people out there that can relate, that can point you in the right direction, that can get you the help that you need. So we're going to dive right into it. Here's my story. I came from a family that had elements of addiction in it. Growing up, I was born in Long Beach, California. I was raised, our family kind of, if I look back on it, struggled kind of like any other family that I knew back then, living paycheck to paycheck, kind of bounced around and moved around a lot. When I was in junior high school, we moved to Huntington Beach, California, and that's where I started getting friendships that were, more than just acquaintances, people that I knew, people I went to school with. I hung around with some people, and I was kind of loyal to the group of people that I was hanging around with. And during my junior high time, going to school, and those friends, they started smoking pot. And that was introduced to me. And it was kind of around me a lot. And so I started smoking pot and doing what I call, living what I call the party lifestyle. And this party lifestyle is what I kind of attribute to this mentality that it was kind of like an anything goes or everything goes kind of party type lifestyle. It's just like, yeah, let's have fun. Woo! It kind of matched who I was and my identity, and kind of like the lifestyle of the party. I was kind of like the party animal, or if you want to call it that. Moving along into high school, I was drinking a lot more, and I, you know, during my high school, early high school, freshman year, I was just smoking pot and drinking beer, and, you know, going to keg parties. That kind of lifestyle kind of engulfed who I was, and I found my identity in it, and that really was fun. I can't explain it other ways. To me, it was fun, and that's all I ever knew. And everyone that I was around kind of supported that. Everyone that I was around, I was like the life of the party. I found my identity in that, and so it was fun. I looked forward to the weekends. I looked forward to, you know, what party would be next, and anywhere in between. Then I was always trying to have a good time, no matter what it was. But living that party lifestyle, it, for me, looking back now, I saw like the progression of things. And I don't want to call pot a gateway drug. I want to call like the party lifestyle kind of like the gateway drug, where one thing kind of leads to another, kind of like Netflix and chill. One thing does lead to another. So like, just for instance, you know, there was a time where I, you know, was, you know, smoking pot drinking alcohol. I never thought I would do any kind of like meth or any other drugs. I thought those guys were losers and I was really against it. But, you know, when I was smoking pot, I smoked pot so much. And so what happened was, you know, there was a question was like, oh, hey, let's put a little bit of coke on the meth. And so, you know, they call it Cocoa Puffs. And so I tried that a couple of times. I'm like, oh, that's not that bad. And then a couple times where I was at a party, they were doing lines of coke. And I'm like, well, I already kind of, you know, dabbled in smoking the Cocoa Puffed stuff. Let me try this. And so I tried that. And now, even at that point, I was like, oh, no, I'll never do crystal meth. I'll never, never do meth. But again, you know, partying and just the progression of things made it more acceptable to try the next step. And so, you know, after I did a couple times, you know, snorting a couple lines of coke, I came into an acquaintance that did meth on a regular basis, and he had meth. And I didn't remember it being like a crazy, like, question whether I was going to do it or not. I was just like, yeah, let's have fun. Let me, you know what? I'll try it a little bit, right? I'll try it a little bit. And I want to say I was probably, if I look back, I'm probably like 15, 16. And I tried meth for the first time. And whoa, it, the experience that I had, the rush that I had, the feelings I had, was just next level. The party lifestyle, that, you know, drinking and smoking pot, it was good, but it wasn't, it was kind of almost getting a little old at that time. And then this meth just like, just intensified it. And I used to hang around with, like stoners and, you know, partiers who drank a lot. When I started doing meth, I kind of distanced myself from those people and, started hanging out with other people who did meth, 'cause that's kind of what I was into at the time. And, I was introduced to somebody who, knew how to steal a lot of stuff. And anyway, he taught me how to steal stuff. And I used that as like an generation of income to help fund my addiction to meth, which I didn't even think it was addiction. At that time, still, I was in denial, thinking it was just partying. And so to further party or have a better party, I'd go and steal stuff because this guy taught me how to steal stuff and sell it. And then we would come up on, you know, this bunch of drugs and we would do it. And that was my life for the next many years. Looking back again, it's just, it's interesting because I don't see it as a timeline. I see it as it's all bunched up together. But that whole entire period of doing meth and doing drugs and the party lifestyle was close to like a 10-year period, all bunched up into these memories that I just don't like. Anyhow, doing meth and doing drugs and living that kind of lifestyle, stealing stuff for almost like for a living, for a full-time job, ended up getting me into this place called Juvenile Hall. I don't know if you guys, you know, heard of this place. But it's a jail for minors. Anyone under 18 would go to this place called Juvenile Hall. If I were to wrap up Juvenile Hall in one statement, I would say it was a place where they served cookies and milk before bed. To me, it wasn't really a penalty. It was kind of like a home away from home. It was kind of like a vacation or summer camp. The first time I went, I think I probably did 2 months and it was easy. It was, I just, you know, was obedient. I did what I was supposed to do. And then I did my time and I left. At that time, my parents had probably, I think they've been separated. My mom was in and out of homeless shelter. My dad was, in between girlfriends and, it was kind of a rough time for me and my family. And so, it was kind of a way to get away from my family and my situation. I'm just being very vulnerable right now and open. Now, So this place that was meant to be punishment ended up just being a vacation or a home away from home. And I probably accumulated 3 years, I think, in between growing up, around two and a half to 3 years of my time growing up spent in juvenile hall. I would do 2 months here, 6 months here, 9 months here, 9 months here. And it was just, I fit in there. It wasn't that bad. Now, growing up, I look back and I didn't really remember anyone who was Christian, if I could just put it out there. I didn't know anybody who thought the way differently from what I thought. I didn't know any people who, or I didn't hang around with anybody other than partiers, people who partied. And those people, I don't remember them being Christian or sharing their beliefs at all. I just remember that when I found myself in juvenile hall, there was this one time where, you know, they'd have a lot of free time, where they would have programs, they would have movies and movie night with popcorn right before the cookies in bed, or cookies and milk before bed. So we'd have a movie night, and that's generally when they would have the programs and Bible studies and whatnot. And so there was this time that I remember, and I distinctively remember it because it was somewhat of a life-changing moment, although it didn't happen instantaneously, and I'll explain that. So what it was I had a choice, and I believe it was like the an old Batman movie or a superhero movie, something of the sort. I had the option of watching the movie that I've seen probably dozens of times, or this guy who I was sitting next to invited me to go to a Bible study. And I never really, you know, heard anything about Jesus. I never knew, but I was kind of curious when he was talking about a Bible study, because at that time, I've heard of people going to these Bible studies and they come back and I had no idea what they were talking about. So, this time when they invited me, I just thought about, you know what? I've seen this movie, you know, whatever the movie was. I can't even remember what the movie was. I just was like, you know what? Let me give this thing a try. And so I found myself in this small, probably 10 by 12 room in juvenile hall. There was about six chairs in there, and there was this couple that came in, and just, I don't remember what the couple's names were. I don't remember who else was in the room. I just remember that the couple, when they started opening their mouth and they started telling me about living a life for Jesus, it was like everything made sense. It's like, wow. I never saw life like that. I never visioned life past like just getting, you know, getting high and having fun. I never thought that life was more than my happiness or my my joy. I never thought of anything. I never thought that there would be a life. I never thought that that kind of life would be even desirable or enjoyable. And so when they were saying that, it was just so made so much sense. And now in my memory of that time of during that, I don't remember the scriptures they shared. I don't even remember the conversation at all. All I remember was like, oh my gosh, what they're saying makes so much sense. And if I were even to picture the couple as they were sharing with me this life of Jesus, they just, my memory reminds them, like they look like angels with beams of light shining behind them and almost blinding me with this awesome life that they're telling me about. And I wanted more. And I tried to research that because I had a taste of something. I heard something. They planted this seed and I wanted more. And so at that time, I was probably in there for 6 months, and I had probably 2 months left after that meeting, after that Bible study. And I asked questions. I asked to meet regularly with the chaplain that was going there. And he bless his heart. I remember his name, Chaplain Rick. And he's still working to this day, going into juvenile halls and volunteering his time. And bless Chaplain Rick. But Chaplain Rick would meet with me weekly. He even gave me my first Bible that I think he even gave me a Bible that looked like a comic book that explained the stories in the Bible in comic book form, which I think is awesome. But he would ask answered my questions. And to me, it never really clicked. It never made sense. And when I read the Bible at the time, it was just like words on a page. It was just like black and white. And when I got out and when I got released, I pretty much left Jesus and that whole Bible study stuff in juvenile hall, waiting for me when I came back. And when I did come back, I continued asking those questions, but still I did the same repeating thing. Except I went out, I get out, I go back to my party lifestyle, my party friends. I would get in trouble. I'd come back, cookies and milk, Bible studies, and then the cycle would repeat itself. Eventually, I got to where I was 18 years old, and it was my last time in juvenile hall. And I think I lasted maybe a year on the outside with my addiction. At this time, I was probably 19, full-blown addiction to meth, stealing stuff for a living. I was a career criminal. And I've already been convicted of, or adjudicated, because as a juvenile, you, I guess, can't be convicted. So they call it adjudicated. I already had a couple cases against me of stealing stuff. So commercial burglary, such like that. But when I was 19, I, got arrested again, and it was different. I was in county jail. County jail kind of hit me as a shell shock moment. It was a moment where I was like, where are the cookies and milk? and they're like, you have to buy them yourself. And I'm like, well, I don't have any money. I stole stuff for money. And, you know, everybody that I know, I've either stolen from or robbed. And, you know, it burned all my bridges, even my family. And I was alone. And that was probably the hardest time that I've ever served. Now, I got released and went back, and at that time, I knew I was full-blown in my addiction. It was a rough life. My family knew it. If I were to look back, my view on my life expectancy, I didn't see past 30. I didn't think I'd make it to 30 years old, let alone be a family man, let alone be have a wife or kids or live a normal life, like buy a house or whatnot. No, that was not in any of my future that I've ever dreamed up at this point. I was addicted. And I knew it. Now, fast forward to, I was 23. So we're already years and years and years of my addiction running from the cops. I've looked back on it, and I'm the only one I could literally say I've, when running from the police, I literally have gotten away more times than I've been caught. Not to laugh or like boast or to brag about it. I don't want to try and glorify this part of my life. It's just, trying to explain to you who I am and what I was. I literally have stolen over $1 million worth of stuff. If you were to compile all the stuff that I've stolen, it would fill up probably close to like 5 or 6 storage units. That's how deep that my addiction went. And then even though my addiction wasn't just to meth, because I was fully blown addiction to meth. Now I tried like heroin, I've tried mushrooms, acid, all that. I've tried all those drugs. It was before Molly, so I didn't really have that. But I was full blown addicted to meth. But my addiction wasn't just doing meth. My addiction was the adrenaline rush that I would get from stealing stuff while on meth. Now, that led to, fast forward to age 23, I get arrested. And I don't just get arrested. Now, the charges that I was looking at was crazy. This last time I got arrested, I believe it was 38 counts or 38 felonies. 38 commercial burglaries that they wanted to convict me of. And they wanted to give me 8 months per charge. So you do the math. It came out to like 24 years in jail was my first plea bargain when I went to trial or court. And I just remember like hearing that, like They're charging me with 38 felonies, and they want it, their first like bargain that they're going to give me, their first offer was 24 years. I just remember going back to my dorm, and I was in a dorm of like 120 people. It was bunk beds everywhere. I just remember going back to my dorm, sitting on my bunk and like asking, what have I been doing with my life? I sat there. And I think it was a prayer. I prayed. I said, God, you know, what have I been doing with my life? You know, if you were to ask me when I was a kid growing up, what did I want to be when I grew up? I never would have answered in a million years. I want to be addicted to methamphetamines. I want to be in jail, serving 24 years in jail or prison. I never would have answered that. My honest answers would have been like a firefighter or a policeman, honestly. It was a shock when I was asking myself, what have I been doing with my life? And immediately I get this notion, this urge, this feeling, and this memory of what those two people in juvenile hall in that Bible study room, that kind of life that they were talking about. And immediately I started, I requested a Bible. I started reading the Bible and I started asking God, God, I did a great job of screwing my life up. I did a great job of messing my life up. If you can make it any better, if you could do a better job than what I've been doing right now, sitting in jail, looking at 24 years and this methamphetamine addiction, if you can do a better job here, take my life and you do it. Use it. Do what you can do, God. I think it's funny because I look back and I tell this story to all my friends and, you know, the people that I meet with now. And I look back and I tell the story as I started reading the Bible. And I was like, man, the Bible was like, when I was starting to read, everything was jumping off of the Bible. It was like, man, everything started making sense. It was like life before that point was like, I was looking at it through, you know, it was black and white, kind of like the beginning of the Wizard of Oz, you know, the beginning of the old school Wizard of Oz, where everything was black and white. Then she, you know, Dorothy was in the tornado and she's no longer in Candace. And then she leaves, you know, lands in the Wizard or in the Oz, Land of Oz. And then everything now magically is colorful. Well, now that I'm, you know, I believe that was a conversion moment when I asked God, you know, take my life. And I started reading the Bible and everything made sense. It was like I was viewing things in color. It was like, wow, how come I never knew this? So about 3 weeks into reading the Bible, again, I was just brand new, not knowing anything about it. I was in this jail cell of 120 guys. And generally every night, which is I thought was kind of odd at the beginning, but every night when lights went out, there'd be this guy who'd get up in front of everybody and they would, he would read a couple of Bible scriptures and lead everybody in the Lord's Prayer. If you guys don't know what the Lord's Prayer is, it's the Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Father, give us this day our daily bread and forgive us for our sins, for we forgive those who sin against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For yours is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Anyhow, there was a guy who got up regularly and did that. And well, 3 weeks into it, 3 weeks into, you know, being a new Christian, that guy gets released. And I'm sitting on my bunk reading the Bible. That's all I did was I just read. And I read and I read and I read. But 3 weeks into it, there's these three guys who came up. They're kind of big. They're, you know, they're older. They look like they're, you know, they had a lot of muscles. Anyway, they're like, hey, is that the Bible? And I said, yes. And they're like, well, hey, the guy who does the night prayers left, you're going to have to do it now. And I'm like, oh no, you don't understand. I'm new at this. I have no idea. They're like, oh, I don't care. You're doing it. And I'm like, I really wanted to tell them and argue with them, and I wanted to plead with them a good case, because I have a good case. You see, growing up and going to high school, you know, I was terrified of public speaking. Now, there's a story of me. I tried out for drama once in high school. I was probably a freshman, and the play that I tried out for was Alice in Wonderland, and I was I got the part, the King of Hearts, and I only had one line. My line was off with his head. And it came to the production. I was all dressed up in, you know, my King of Hearts costume up there. It came to the time where I needed to deliver my one line off with his head. And I froze. I literally almost peed my pants. That's how much I was frightened of, like, that's how much of stage fright I had. Somebody else had to end up yelling off with his head. And these guys in jail, I'm 23 now, I just became a Christian, I just started reading the Bible, they're telling me that I have to get up in front of 120 guys every night and, you know, share a couple scriptures and lead everyone in the Lord's Prayer. I'm like, no, you guys, I can't do this. But I couldn't argue with them because I felt, I was fearful, honestly, for my safety at that point. So I did, I started doing it. I started every night. I would get up and I would be sharing with these inmates, you know, scriptures like, consider it pure joy when you're going through trials of many kinds, because, you know, the testing of your faith produces perseverance. I'm sharing these with these guys. I'm 3 weeks into this, reading the Bible, just a brand new Christian. I'm preaching to 120 guys. And it came naturally. And at that moment, I knew that God had a plan and that God was going to use me. Fast forward, during my trial, I was still going to trial for that, the 24 years, the 38 counts of burglary. I was still going through trial. I was fighting it for 8 months. Anyhow, during that 8 months, I came to the realization, I have an addiction. I have a problem. And if I were to look back and be honest and truthful with myself, there was multiple times that I have tried to beat addiction on my own. That I tried to get clean and sober. It would last. I've tried NA, AA. I've tried the 12-step programs. I tried all of that. It never stuck. And so I came to the realization that I need a program, and I've tried like regular drug programs before, you know, 30-day, 90-day, 60-day programs, and they never worked. They just never worked. So I was looking for something different because I had this newfound relationship with Jesus. I had this, I'm now a Christian. And so what I wanted was a faith-based program, a program that was Christian-based. And so I was searching for those programs, and I'm glad that I did. We're going to pause real quick, and I want to kind of go over my experience, and we'll finish up with my story. When I was doing a little bit of research, and it was kind of hard to kind of search like the state-run addiction rehabs or therapy or whatnot, but I did find some comparisons of success rate, and it was shocking. There was some published pieces on how successful the state-run and non faith-based programs were, and the majority of the programs were in the teens, anywhere from 12 to 18% success rate. The highest, or, you know, if you want to say the median of the success rates was like around anywhere from 10 to 30% success rate for either state-run or non-faith-based programs. But I was researching also faith-based programs. The majority of faith-based programs, and even the one that I actually went into, had like an 80 to 89% success rate. Now, obviously, the success rate kind of varies. You have to complete the program, and obviously, the length and duration of the program is a factor. I believe personally that year-long programs are 100% more. I would say 100%. That was a made-up statistic. Super more, if that's even a word, successful than a 30-day or 90-day program, just because you have the consistency over time. Now, if you were diagnosed with cancer and they said, if you had this option to go to this doctor and do this treatment, and it will save you, probably your odds are 10 to 30% success. Or you can try this treatment, and they're getting around 80 to 89% success rate. Which one would you choose? Of course you would choose the one that's 80 to 89% success rate. Now, doing a little bit of investigative work, I dug into the reason why this faith-based the success rate was so high. And the only thing that I can find is that this journalist mentioned was what they called the Jesus factor. And they said the only thing different, generally the for the same thing, they're serving the same food, they have pretty much the same style of programs, they have the same requirements. If they're they're comparing inpatient programs to inpatient programs, the length of the programs to non-faith-based programs, and they said literally the only thing that makes a difference, that jumps the success rate from 10 to 30% to 80 to 89% success rate, is what they called the Jesus factor. Now, they couldn't pinpoint exactly what it was that consisted of this Jesus factor. All they knew was these faith-based programs that had a Jesus element to it, that people relied on faith, and that the Jesus would transform their lives instead of them doing their self-help or their working their steps. They said that the Jesus factor was literally the only thing different. And that made all the difference, in my opinion. Back to my story, I ended up after 8 months fighting for this faith-based program, and I was just pleading with them, come on. They got down to where they're like, you do 2 years in prison with halftime, and you'd only have like 3 months left. And I said, no, I'm addicted. If you were to let me out right now, I would go out and I would do drugs. You have no idea. That's how bad I'm addicted. I said, I need a program. I need you to court order me to the program, because otherwise I'm not going to do it on my own. I won't do it unless you court order it to me. So eventually I got a different judge who didn't want to argue with me and said he was familiar with the program that I was requesting and said, you know what? I will court order you to a year in that program and a year in county jail. And I took the deal. I finished out my remaining time in county jail as the prayer man every night and got released and entered that faith-based program. And shout out to Teen Challenge is the program that I went to. It saved my life. I was not going anywhere. I never doubted that I would leave the program. I was committed because I knew that it would change my life and I needed the help. The funny thing is that, as I was, gaining traction under my, I guess if you want to say me working my program, I got like 12 or 6 months into it, I can get like a pass where I can go visit my family and friends. And I'd visit my old, family and friends, and they were, they were laughing at me. They're like, man, this Jesus stuff really, really changed you. They told me, they're like, man, those Christians, they're brainwashing you. And I got kind of offended, but then I started looking back and I thought, man, I thought that living the party lifestyle, that doing meth all night, stealing people's stuff just to earn money, to get more meth, to steal more stuff, to do that vicious cycle. I thought that that kind of life was fulfilling. And I thought, I'm like, you know what? My brain needed to be washed. And I'm like, I needed to rethink life. I needed to look at life differently. I needed to see a different approach because of the way I was living life that way. I never saw past 30. And so I ended up graduating that program, Teen Challenge. Not only that, because I was only quartered for 12 months, I ended up doing what they called an internship where I was part of the leadership team for an additional, I think it was like 4 to 5 months. And then even after that, I did an additional year at their ministry institute, where it's like kind of like their Bible college. And my life was completely changed. I completed their Bible college. I became an associate pastor at a church. If you were to ask me when I was in high school doing drugs or just partying that I would go to Bible college and be a pastor, I would have laughed at you. I would have been like, what are you smoking? I want some of that, because I thought you would be you'd be crazy. But my life was transformed. And it was transformed by that program. And it was transformed by God. It was transformed by Jesus. It was literally the only thing that was different. That fast forward, I ended up moving out here to Las Vegas, where I currently stay. Met my beautiful wife. And Teen Challenge had a center out here in Las Vegas that I got connected with. And for, I think it was 2 years, I was actually the center supervisor of the program here in Teen Challenge. So I had some time to kind of mentor a group of men on their recovery. And it was one of the most fulfilling times of my life, just being able to give back and to mentor and to give advice on life and recovery. And even to this day, I still am in contact with the Teen Challenge here in Las Vegas. And I still am in contact with some of the guys that I was, just being able to mentor and see them grow. And some of them are missionaries. One of my buddies just got married. So it's just amazing the community that I've built over this. And it all started with a juvenile hall Bible study, where the seed was planted. Fast forward, where I saw the necessity that my life needed to change, where I surrendered to God and He changed my life, showed me gifts that I've never thought I'd have. And it was, pretty much, again, I can't stress it enough that I had tried myself. I tried to do it like this whole self-help stuff. I tried to work my 12-step program. That works for some people. Hats off to them. For me, that didn't work. And so it was definitely the Jesus factor that was all the difference. I would call it a miracle. 2 Corinthians 5:17 says this, that therefore, if anyone's in Christ, he's a new creation. The old is gone, the new has come. Talking about God made me new. That it's not just like an enhanced Robert where, I'm just like Robert with 2.0 or Robert with Jesus. No, He made me a whole new creature. And I'm so glad that my wife didn't meet the me back in my addiction, and my kids didn't see any of that. I feel for those who are in recovery that their family is more involved in that. I feel for them. But I just really am. So that's pretty much my story in a nutshell. Fast forward, I work a pretty much normal job right now. I volunteer at my church. I am recording these podcasts on topics that I don't agree, and just want to prove that we can have dialogue. And I'd love to know your thoughts. I hope I didn't offend you. If I did, let me hear your point of view on things. Let me hear, respond and comment on your opinion. And I would love to hear it. Also, like if there is any kind of topic or if you know anyone, I know I have a couple things lined up in the future here about like conversations about abortion and maybe me with an atheist. And so I have a couple things lined up, but I need topics. So let me know, comment on Instagram, hit me a response. Let me know. And thanks for, you know, enjoying this, this ride that I'm on. If you or someone you know is struggling with addiction and needs help, there's a national hotline. It's 1-800-662-HELP. That's 1-800-662-4357. I don't want to end on a down note, so I just want to say I had a great time just reliving the transformation that happened in my life, and if you guys have any comments, anything that you thought of during this episode, I'd love to hear. Reach out to me. There's definitely a lot of stories I didn't get to, but tune in because I am in the process of writing a book, and stay tuned for that. And so thanks for tuning into this episode, and we'll see you next time.